Good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And my name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we're here talking about cars. And this is how you can participate if you have a car question. Let's start on it, and then tell me about the symptoms. Then we'll go from there. We'll talk about what you can do to help further identify the problem, and I'll make an educated guess on what it might be. So, again, 602-508-0960. We're actually up here in Payson. We are snowed in, and we've had no power since 2 o'clock this morning. So we're talking to you via telephone, but all of our equipment is actually running off of a generator, auxiliary power, right now. So the house is cold, and it's cold outside, and I guess up in Pine they have 20 inches of snow, and only the Lord knows what Flagstaff's got. But from Payson to Pine, I understand it's closed because a big semi's blocked the road. And last night, Renee and I came down from Pine at about 5 miles an hour. And the snow on the road probably was 6 or 8 inches deep in places. And it took us 3 times the normal amount. And Renee would watch the right side of the road, and I would watch the left side of the road. And we tried to keep the truck in between what we thought was the road. And it was a pretty hairy situation. But nevertheless, we got home and we got safe. But right now, I think most of Payson has no power. And so when I went over to Home Depot to get a power strip to run off of our generator, there were lots of people buying big propane heaters, big heaters, and just about every other guy had a big generator on his cart. So, like I said, we've been out of power. It'd be a bad idea to head up this way unless you've got a really good reason. And you better have four-wheel drive because nobody's moving anywhere unless you got four-wheel drive. Anyway, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. They've been rebuilding transmissions in the Phoenix area since 1968. Phil owns Automatic Transmission Exchange. They're very good at what they do. They're capable of repairs, replacements. They can fix yours. They can replace yours. They can rebuild yours. And they're really good about taking a ride with you if you can demonstrate the problem with the car. And that's really what needs to happen in pretty much all car repair, but especially in transmissions. If you can make it happen and show them exactly what you're concerned about, then there's a really good chance that Phil and his staff at Automatic Transmission Exchange can help you. He's at 40th Street in Washington. He's been there since, I believe, 1968, and he's open on Saturdays 8 to 12 for your convenience if you want to stop by and talk to somebody there. I have an email this week. And I'm going to read you this email because this is actually the worst of our industry. He has a 2003 54,000 mile. I'm not going to tell you what kind of vehicle it is because that'll tell you more than I want you to know. So he gets he's told that the brake job on the rear needs to be replaced, and they're going to resurface the rotors, and it's $250. And if we're going to take the entire market, of course, you're going to see brake jobs, what we call an axle brake job, from $39 to $139 to $195 to $300 or $400. But the $250, he could do better by $100 with no problem at all. So he had a question on why would they resurface the rotors, and that's because we want the new pads and the rotors to work together and break in together. And typically there's a little bit of warpage, and a resurface of the rotors is a good thing. So I explained that to him. They told him he needed a brake fluid flush, and they wanted $135, and he asked me about the validity of that. And I explained to him that the new technology allows us to check the moisture in your brake fluid, and I would bet big money that at 54,000 miles with a car that's 2.5 years old that you don't need the brake fluid flushed. And so I said, I don't know that I would do that right now. They also wanted to clean the evaporator. Now, the evaporator is the cold component behind your glove box, and we pump Freon into that cold component, and that's where you get your cold air from. So they wanted to clean his evaporator for $100. And folks, that's really a black and white issue, because if your evaporator ends up with mold on it, then your car will start stinking when you run your air. And so that's what I asked him. I said, do you ever smell anything at all when you're running either your heater
or your air conditioning? And he said, no whatsoever. In addition to flushing out the evaporator, I want to tell you that those of you that run in maximum air all the time have a bigger chance of ending up with some cuts anyway. Well, folks, if you have fuel injection problems, you're going to have either a rough idle or a rough cruising speed. If you have throttle body issues, you're going to have a rolling idle, maybe when it's cold or even hot, and there's going to be an obvious instability to the idle on your car. So that's $140, and I told him if you've got no symptoms, then I think that that's just commonly called what I call a wallet flush. And then they wanted to replace the engine filter and the cabin filters for $83, and I asked him if he was capable of doing that, and he said actually he was. And he said he's already replaced the cabin filter once. And then he also said the cabin filter keeps the air clean in the evaporator case, which is behind the glove box, which is something else they wanted to flush. And he said, when I took the cabin filter out, I looked inside and everything was clean. And I said, did you see any moss or anything? And he said, no. And I said, okay, I'm going to pass on that as well. So his name was Joe. He was 70 years old. He said he worked in a small VW dealership a long time ago in the 60s or 70s. He said that his mechanical expertise and opinions are probably passe by now. But in reality, our talk was long, and he really had far more skills than he led on to believe. But the idea is that if you're uncomfortable about what your shop has told you, then the default is would you please write all of that down along with your pricing and then put your name and phone number there so if I want to come back and make an appointment, I can. And here's why that's kind of scary for a shop is because if they're lying to you, they're not going to want to do that. That's not something they're going to want to do. They don't know if you're with the Attorney General's Fraud Division. I've told this story a couple of times, but a lady took her car into a transmission shop because she had a noise. And they quoted her $3,300 or $3,800 to replace her transmission. And her boyfriend and I go back to the 70s. He called me. I called her. And I said to her, what you described to me, and I've listened very carefully to your answers as I ask you questions, what you described to me is a noise in the front of the engine, not the transmission. And especially because the noise is there, whether it's in park, neutral, reverse, or drive. And clearly, if it was a noise in the transmission, it would change as we went through those four gears. And she said, no, it's there in park. It's there in reverse. It's there as I pass neutral, and it's there in drive. And it goes away within 2 minutes after I leave my house. So anyway, the car was taken to a shop, and they found out that there's a little plastic piece in the timing chain called a shoe the chain rides on. And so there was a considerable amount of labor to disassemble the car and replaced those two shoes, but the bill was about one-fifth of what the transmission was. And during that process, I said to her, I think you should say to this person at this transmission shop, hey, my dad lives in Milwaukee, and he's going to want to know what I'm doing with the car, and I'm probably going to have to borrow some money from him. So would you write down exactly what you found and exactly what I need, and then write down your phone number and your name, and that way my dad can call you and talk to you. And he said, sure. But when she got there, they gave her a blank ticket with no diagnosis written, with no estimate that they gave her on the phone, and all it said was check out transmission. And they refused to put the rest of the information on the ticket. So when that happens, you don't need me to tell you what to do. So those are the kinds of things that I have available for you, 602-508-0960. I can help you understand those things. But I want to remind you that the default question at your repair shop is when they tell you you need something, then you ask them, what symptom do I have today that you're going to correct with your suggested $140, $135, your suggested $250, your suggested $99? Those are the kinds of things that they're important. Last but not least, this last 2 months, we've been interviewing people to work for us because we had one of our best people move back to California to run the family business. We were sorry to see him go, but we understood. So one of the people that came to interview us for us was from out of state,
and he came from a brake shop, and he told us this story. He said, we had a $139 brake job, and nobody was taken, or I had a $199 brake job, and nobody was taking, you know, the opportunity for the $199 brake job. So we were told by management to drop it to $139, he says, and then people start coming in. However, when they got their ticket, or when before we actually returned their car to them, we stamped their ticket, no guarantee, and they would ask us, you know, why did you do that? And he says, well, you opted for the cheap brake job, and so even though we're using pads, they're not the best pads in the world. He told us it's really easy to walk them up from $139 to $250 at that point because, well, if you want new pads and you want really good pads, that's $199, and if you want us to cut your rotors, that's an extra this and that. So he kind of sat there and smiled and said, you know, that's kind of how we generated sales, and that's how we kind of created the need for premium pads and stuff like that. You need to learn from that. That's the very worst of our industry, and I would say that there's 10 to 20% of them out there that are probably doing some kind of shenanigans like that, and I would suggest that you find another shop. Let me tell you that while I sit here and preach to you about car repair, I also hold myself to the same standard. The other day, a guy brings his car in and has $600 worth of work with some other shop. He's a very nice guy, and he says they didn't fix the problem, and then we fixed it for, I don't know, $235 or so. So I said to him, perhaps you should go back to the first shop and ask them if there's any reimbursement they're willing to make to you, because clearly they spent $600 that really didn't fix your problem, and they probably didn't tell you they were guessing at the $600 mark. So I don't know if he's going to go back, but he certainly has a right to go back. And if I were that shop, I would have probably given him everything but the part I put on. He benefited from the part, and I'd probably talk my way out of the part, but I'd give him everything else. And the part on that case was $80, so he'd have walked out with $520 or something like that. So I'm held to the same standard. My staff is held to the same standard. I'm not preaching out of one side of my mouth and talking to my customers as the other. I'm the same. So again, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back right after this.
The mechanic raised up from under my...
Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about car repair issues. We've got Dan on the line, and if you want to join us, you certainly can. 602-508-0960. Dan, you stay right there for about 15 seconds. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. Action is located at I-17 in Deer Valley. It's a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that served the Deer Valley and the Phoenix area since 1983. Tom and his staff are well capable of identifying the problem with your symptoms with your help. They're capable of repairing the problem and doing quality workmanship. They do really nice, excellent customer service, and they have a good, fast turnaround time. And the best part I like is their technicians are ASE Master certified, and that makes a big difference. So if you're a vehicle owner and you're anywhere near Deer Valley and North Phoenix and I-17, they're on the northwest corner, by the way, then if you haven't found a shop, may I suggest you go in for something as simple as an oil change and check out Action Auto Repair. Dan, good morning. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2002 Toyota Tacoma truck, and I got a person backed into my back panel on the passenger side. And I was wondering, do you recommend someone that would do a good repair job on that?
Yeah. Now, does his insurance company pay for the repair of your truck?
They said that they would pay 50%.
How did they get to 50%?
Well, they it's sort of interesting. They backed into me, but they said that they couldn't determine which one of us was actually responsible. So they said they would pay 50%, and I'll have to pay the other 50%. So I'm just trying to do some work to find out where I could take it and get some kind of an idea of what price I'm looking at.
All right. Well, I can tell you that if you just go to my website, marksalem.com, marksalem.com, and click on Best Car Repair Shops and then click on Paint and Body, then you can find a shop. But I want to talk to you for a minute, okay?
Sure.
I'm going to ask you, don't give me the name of the insurance company, but I'm going to ask you, is this a name, a big name brand insurance company?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I think that you should probably talk to your insurance company, and let me tell you why. I work with insurance companies every day of my life, and I'm a former police officer, and I know that when you're backing up, pretty much you are fully responsible for what happened. Now, let me ask you a question. When you backed into your car, is there any scratch marks on the side of your car indicating that you were going forward when he hit you, or did were you stopped when he hit you?
Well, I was stopped.
Okay. That makes a really big difference. You can imagine that if I were moving through a parking lot, let's say I was moving kind of rapidly, and somebody backed into the door, obviously there'd be scratches all down the side of my truck, right?
Uh-huh. Well, there does seem to be a scratch quite a long ways across the back there.
Okay. So I just think you should look at it because I don't think that you should settle for 50%. I think you should talk to your own insurance company because your own insurance company could easily fix your truck and then turn around and go after the other insurance company and let them two guys fight over who's at fault.
Okay.
But I think if you do that, I think you're going to be treated fairly. I think your insurance company is going to do what they're supposed to do, and that's protect you. Now, they may come back and say, you're moving through the parking lot too fast. He backed up. You weren't there 1 minute. You were the next. And you say, yeah, I probably was going 25. And they say, well, you're not supposed to go 25. So maybe you are 50-50. But whenever I've seen a backup, when I was a policeman, every single time the guy backing up got the ticket. It was not an issue where the car all of a sudden appeared out of nowhere. You are responsible when you back up.
Okay.
So anyway, good luck to you, Dan. I appreciate your call.
Thank you very kindly. Bye-bye.
You betcha. So it's 25 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and if you'd like to join us, you certainly can. And the number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And let me tell you about a pretty good shop out there, not a really pretty good shop, but a pretty good or darn good three shops on the west side. S&S Tire Auto Service is in Peoria, Sunrise, and Goodyear. At S&S, they have every kind of tire you'd ever want, as well as many different brands of the same size of tire. So they have heavy-duty equipment, golf cart equipment, lawn and garden equipment, ATVs, trailers, commercial tires, construction tires, as well as any tire that you might want or need for your personal vehicle, including SUVs. So you have the ability to go to S&S and say to them, here's my size, and then I'd like the premium, the middle, and the low-budget set of tires. I'd like prices out the door, and S&S will accomplish that for you. So they have what it takes for you to make an intelligent decision. So if this car is on its way out of your family in the next year, you might want to buy the cheapest tires. And if this car is going to be for your daughter as she goes to college out of town, maybe you want the most expensive tires, but S&S can help you. They also do all kinds of suspension work, alignment work, and that kind of stuff that goes along with the tires. Again, S&S Tire, Peoria, Sunrise, and Goodyear. On my website, marksalem.com, we have lots of good shops. These shops in my list was one of the very first, if not the first list, it was certainly one of the very first lists in the state of Arizona, and I date back to 1988. The number one question we got on the radio was, where's your shop at, Mark? That wasn't really what I was trying to accomplish, so I created the best car repair shops, and I loaded it full of shops that I knew the owners, and I knew they were honest, and we allowed other people to nominate themselves. So that's how it happened. Let's go to the phone, and who's up next?
Jim is next.
Jim, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yes, Mark, I have a quick question. I have a 2012 Ford F-150. It has a 3.5 EcoBoost engine. I had a misfire on four and six cylinders, and it turned out to be spark plugs, so I had the spark plugs replaced and the boots at the same time. But I was told, I wasn't by the shop or anything, that just a friend of mine has the same truck that he took his to the dealership, and they had to they said it's a good idea to have the computer rebooted after the spark plugs are put in.
The computer rebooted?
Yes.
I've never heard of that before.
Okay.
Never in my life. I've never done that before. We've been in business since 1979, and I process probably about 10,000 cars a year. So I don't know that. I've never heard of that. And frankly, I don't believe that. And if you want to reboot your computer, then pull both battery cables off the battery, touch the two battery cables together to discharge the capacitors, leave the cable sit there for a little while, 5-10 minutes, put the positive on first, put the negative on second, and you now have rebooted your computer.
Oh, it's such a gimmick from the dealership. And I feel no need to do it. The truck runs great now.
Yeah, no, it's good that it runs great, but I don't understand why they said that, and I don't see a need for that. But thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Good luck to you. And again, that phone number is 602-508-0960. When we come back, we'll take your calls. The lines are wide open, four of them right now, because I'm using one because we're snowed in up north. So we'll be back with you right after this.
All about that demon, all the mobile, the metal monster with the polyglass wheel.
So welcome back, everybody. It's 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We are up north, and we're kind of snowed in. And you can't believe what we're doing right now. We've got the auxiliary power on, so we're running off generators. We've got our phones plugged in so that we can talk to you through the phone line. And then we're using an iPad on the Internet to give us the time when we have to get in and out of our radio show. So it is quite a calamity. But when you're up north and you're driving in bad weather and stuff like that, it's every single person that ends off the side of the road, every single car crash when there's slippery roads and bad weather has been created by somebody who outdrove the car's capability or their own capability. And so I just want to tell you that if you're going to come up north in the next couple of days with Pine having 20 inches of snow and Flagstaff having multi-feet of snow, just make sure that you're prepared for it. Last night when Renee and I were coming from Pine to Payson, we were in a blizzard, and we were doing 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9, 10 miles an hour. And as the cars were coming up on the other side, we saw lots of cars that had no business on the road that we were in, but they were all trailed one behind the other. So they felt safe that way, but you could tell by their tracks that they were still sitting on snow. So once they start hitting some really steep hills, there's going to be a significant amount of the cars in that pack of cars that probably wouldn't make it up the hill. I have a one-ton four-wheel drive with 6 tires on the ground, and we dropped some friends off for dinner. And it was all I could do to get that one-ton up a slight grade because there was so much snow and ice. So I was able to go up to the top of the hill, turn around, because I needed to turn around and come back down the hill. And once we got on the highway coming out of Pine heading towards Payson, it was probably the worst snowstorm I've ever been in my life. So anyway, that's just something if you're going to come up here north. And then my wife was coming up on Friday afternoon, and it was raining all on Mount Ord. And she said it was raining pretty hard. And she said there was times where there was a thumping noise going on in the car when she would accelerate or when she would brake. And what that thumping noise is when she's accelerating, one of her traction tires, and she actually has a front-wheel drive vehicle, one of her traction tires was spinning, and she has traction control. So the thumping noise is when you're going up a hill, and let's say it's raining really bad or it's snowing really bad, if the right front tire on her car begins to spin rapidly, the computer knows that because it has a wheel sensor on the right front and on the left front tire. So if the right front goes to 60 miles an hour and the left front is at 15 miles an hour and the speedometer is at 15 miles an hour, the computer knows that that right front tire is running wild. The computer will then apply brakes to the right front tire to slow it down. And when it gets down to where it matches the other side tire, then it lets go of the brakes. The thumping she was hearing was the computer applying her brakes for traction control. When she was stopping, the thumping she was hearing was ABS, automatic braking system, because she was locking up the brakes with the bad traction. So as she came to, as she was braking because of traffic in front of her, if one of the tires locks up, then the ABS will undo the pressure to that tire. It will dump the pressure to that tire. And when it dumps the pressure to that tire, it begins to roll again, and then it will then reapply pressure. Now, folks, this happens. The computer in newer model cars can read 300 Bibles a second. 300 Bibles a second. So we're talking about it, and it may take me 60 seconds or a minute and a half to explain it to you, but in reality, your car can do this in the blink of an eye. And Renee was saying, as I was coming down this hill and applying my brakes, you know, I would hear the thump, thump, thump. But she says, the steering wheel didn't really move, and I didn't know if I was running over, you know, rocks or whatever. But I feel pretty confident that that was just ABS trying to keep the tires under control. The ABS doesn't want to see any tire come to a stop. And as soon as it sees the tire come to a stop, it releases the brake pressure. The car then, the tire begins to roll again, and then it immediately reapplies brake pressure as long as you have your foot on the brake. And its job is to apply enough brake pressure just to the ragged edge of the tire locking up. Now, for me, when I'm in snow, I'm usually going to, if there's no one around me at all, I'm in deep snow. I want to know how much traction I have. I'll jam on my brakes, and if my ABS activates, then I know I'm in a real low traction tape situation. On the other hand, if I apply the brakes and my ABS doesn't apply and my truck comes to a good stop, then I know I'm not in low traction situations, and so my truck's got a little better stick to the road than it would otherwise. So by using my ABS, I can kind of tell how the road's doing. On our way home last night from Pine, I was doing just exactly that. And Renee goes, my wife says, you know, you're scaring the heck out of me when you do that. And I said, I'm just checking to see how bad the road is, because if we need to slow down, we need to slow down. But, you know, already we're doing 5-10 miles an hour anyway. So 602-508-0960, if you have a car question, then I'm willing to take care of it or give you some of the best advice I can. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. And I've got a full bank of calls, but let me tell you about Thompson's Auto Repair real quick. Thompson's Auto Repair is the only shop in Mesa that's on my list. Yes, others have applied, but perhaps they were slightly deficient in the years they've been in business, which is important to me, or maybe they didn't have at least one ASE-certified technician. But Thompson's Auto Repair is going to provide you expert auto and light truck repair maintenance services. They've been in Mesa since 1970. They have ASE-certified technicians, and you only need to meet Brian and Thelma to understand why they're on our list. They are two of the finest people I know. I've said this once, many times. I say Brian's exactly the kind of kid you hope your daughter brings home, and Thelma's exactly the kind of lady you hope your son brings home. And that's why Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa. They're on Stapley, actually on Main Street, just east of Stapley. Main Street, just east of Stapley, the south side of the road. Let's go to the phones. We'll start with Ron. Ron, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. I have a 2010 Ford F-150. It's got about 120,000 miles on it, four-wheel drive. And twice, without my foot being on the brakes come on and start stopping. And then it goes away, and been driving for months and nothing ever happens. It's only done it with me driving it, my wife's truck, and I go get in it every occasionally, just to the store and back, and all of a sudden the brake's coming on, and it feels like the back brake is coming on, but you know, no parking brake on, no anything. It's very bizarre.
Okay, let me ask you a couple of questions. How do you know it's on? Can you feel it, or is there some dash light that illuminates?
Well, the truck starts, you know, all of a sudden the truck starts stopping. One time, they're almost like the one of the tires like started skidding while I was going through the parking lot. Now, the last time it did, I noticed the light on there, and it showed like the icy roads or something, swirly little lines. And yeah, I saw that, and I kind of read it in the book. But I'm on, you know, I'm not driving in the rain. I'm not driving on. I'm on dry pavement, and it, here in the valley.
Okay, well, I have a couple of thoughts. The really quick skidding and then the thump 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 is ABS activation.
Right.
So maybe we have a sensor that's out of whack that's reporting 0 miles an hour at 10 miles an hour. So this truck goes into ABS mode at 10 miles an hour and doesn't understand that the tire is really moving. So that would be something where we'd plug our scanner into your car and we'd go drive it into tight circles to the right, tight circles to the left, and we'd watch the speed of all of the sensors. And if, you know, the other day we had one that as at 40 miles an hour down Warner Road, all the sensors were at 40 miles an hour except one, and one was at 6, and then it would go to 8, then it would go to 18, and then it would go back to 6. So that's just a bad sensor. The first thing you're going to do is blow it off and clean it to make sure that it's just not all fuzzed up and dirty. And if that doesn't do it, then you're going to replace the sensor. It doesn't happen to your wife, though.
No, therefore, she doesn't want me driving her truck.
Well, you're not hurting her truck by activating the ABS. Really and truly, it's something that most people would probably encounter 2-3 times a year, and that opens and closes some valves that would otherwise not be used if you don't ever activate the ABS. But most people are going to have to activate the ABS because they're not paying attention. Somebody stops in front of them, then they hammer the brakes and the ABS, you know, works for them. So I wouldn't be concerned. I'd be more concerned about what's causing it. And the good news is you don't have any red or yellow lights on your dash, and that's good news. All righty?
Yeah. Oh, what's the cost to have a diagnostic like that done?
You're going to be between $75 and $125 at most shops. I give you a window because some of them are $75, some of them are $100 and a quarter.
Okay.
Most of them are going to quote you $75 to $125, and if it takes them, you know, 3/4 of an hour, you're at $75. If it takes them an hour, you're going to be at $110. So that's kind of how it works, but they'll usually give you a window.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you betcha. And also, that would include, say, for instance, the sensor was dirty. Well, we'd clean up the sensor, and then we'd go drive it. Now the sensor's talking to us. Most of the times, shops will wrap that quickly diagnosis into the the repair into the diagnosis. It just depends, but many of us do just exactly that. Okay, Wayne, you're up next. Wayne, how can I help you?
Well, I've got a 2006 Chrysler Town & Country. I got in this morning, had exactly 213,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And love the car. Had it since it had about 100 and a quarter, and it has now developed an odd symptom. When I'm driving and with some load on, accelerating at around 30 to 40 miles an hour, occasionally I get a little hesitation or shudder, and I'm wondering if I'm, you know, maybe got a weak fuel pump pressure or something. I'm not sure, but it's only momentarily. And a little shudder or something, it goes away, and we keep accelerating, runs fine. Never happens at highway speed, and we drive back and forth to California fairly regularly. And so, you know, get a lot of experience at 75 miles an hour, but never any problems.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's not going to be a fuel pump, because if that car will do 70 or 80 miles an hour, then if it was a fuel pump, your car would do 45 okay, and at 47 it would fall on its face. So we're going to eliminate fuel pressure right off the bat. When was the last time this thing had spark plugs in it?
Good question. I have put them in within the last 100,000 miles. I bought it at 125, and I had the plugs and the wires changed out shortly thereafter, but they might have 80,000 miles on them.
Okay. Well, I think you have two things here. Number one, I'm not real concerned about this. Is causing any problems? You can wait till it gets worse and easier to find, because that's going to be kind of hard for us to drag our equipment down the road at 30 miles an hour. So
sure.
That's going to be kind of tough to find that. So I would suggest you wait until it gets worse and easier to find. But if you wanted to, certainly one of the things somebody should do is pull a spark plug out and look at it. If the spark plug gap looks like the Grand Canyon, then your 80,000 probably was 100 or 110, and maybe a set of spark plugs will do it. But on the other hand, it's not likely to be wires because wires are temperature sensitive and also moisture sensitive. So if it rains like crazy, then the wires really short out bad. And you didn't say anything about this being a wet weather issue. You said it's just there. So I just wait until it gets worse. That's what I would do if I were you.
Okay. Well, I just don't want to get stranded somewhere if I don't ask.
Well, I don't think you're going to get stranded because fuel and spark are the two things. You don't have any codes showing. You don't have a crankshaft sensor or camshaft sensor raising its ugly head. You don't have your check engine light on at all. All you've got is this little misfire at 30 miles an hour. So you're not going to break down because it's a 30-mile-an-hour misfire, and you're not going to break down. If you lose your fuel pump and you break down because of that, it's not going to fix this 30-mile-an-hour miss. I promise you that. All righty. Thank you very much. Tim, you're up next. Tim, how can I help you today?
Ken has dropped. We're going to go to Dustin.
Okay. And Tim, I'm sorry I didn't get to you in quick time, but Dustin, you're next. How can I help you?
Hi, sir. I appreciate you taking my call. I had some questions, and it was kind of a blessing that you were talking about driving in the snow. It's not actual fix, but I wanted your advice on we're actually heading up from Mesa, Arizona to Payson today, and I have never driven in the snow today, or I've never driven in the snow. I do have a four-wheel drive truck, but I was just kind of wondering when and do you use four-wheel drive when driving in the snow, even if it's highway and you're going super slow?
Okay, that's a great question. That's a great question. I'm well prepared to handle it. 9 out of 10 guys put it in four-wheel drive when it's way too late.
Okay.
And so I would think that once you see slush, snow, on the roadway, you'd pull off and you'd put it in four-wheel high. And that's not going to hurt you to drive it 35, 45, 55 miles an hour to Payson. Won't hurt you. I don't want you making tight corners. And as soon as you get to Payson, I want you to pull off and take it out of four-wheel high and put it in two-wheel high and continue on unless, of course, the road is nasty there.
Okay.
So you want to do it a little early. It's not going to hurt it. And the only thing that happens is when you put in four-wheel drive, it'll crow hop on a tight right turn or left turn. So it'll go rumpity, rumpity, rumpity. And that's because you're in four-wheel drive. So, and I want to tell you something. Coming home from Payson the other day, I had it in four-wheel drive locked. And I didn't feel bad, and here's why. You're supposed to put it in four-wheel drive once a month and drive straight for, you know, 5-10 miles. Well, I haven't done it in a year. Home from Payson, I said, boy, I'm lubing up that front differential real good. So I was happy about that. So it was a good time. And in your truck, it's going to be the same way. So as soon as you start seeing low traction condition, and as far as driving in the snow, pull in behind somebody with a dually or a big wide footprint, and just pull in behind them and just follow their tracks. Let them blaze the trail for you.
Okay.
And you know, that's how come people get in a big old chain is they got some guy running the front door for him, and he's laying down some pretty good tracks, and by the time you're the fourth or fifth car, then all it is slush, and you can touch the pavement with your tires, and that's kind of what you want. So you just keep moving. What you don't want to do is let the testosterone get built up and decide you're going to start passing everybody, because those kinds of guys end up in the ditch, and we all stop, and we laugh at him, and then we keep driving.
No, I don't want to be that guy, and that's why I called. I was, like, super nervous, and it was kind of a blessing hearing you on the radio talking about, like, almost exactly where we're going. So I was like, oh, I'm going to call this time for the first time. So I really
What happened last night is on our way back from Pine, I mean, I'm in a really bad way. I got 3 inches of snow on my headlights. My wipers are barely keeping up. The front of my truck was completely covered from headlight to headlight with 4 inches of snow when I got home. But while I was going down the road all by myself, because I couldn't find nobody to follow, I felt and saw that the snowplow was coming up behind me. I had nowhere to go, so I pulled off on a straightaway. I pulled off into the left lane, which is the opposing traffic lane. Well, I knew I could see far ahead, so I pulled off there. He went by me on the right, and then I'm here to tell you, I rode his tail all the way to Payson because he's plowing in front of me, and I am on good, and he's throwing a little sand off the back of his truck, so I'm not too close to where the sand's going to damage my paint or hit my windows, but I'm far enough away to take advantage of him plowing and me standing. So the last 3 or 4 miles from Pine, I got to follow a snowplow.
Nice.
All righty.
All right. Well, I appreciate your help, sir.
You're welcome. Good luck to you, and drive safe, and make sure everybody's belted in. And be prepared if you do break down, make sure everybody has warm clothes, because if you break down, you can still start the truck and run the heater and all that kind of stuff. But sometimes help might be 3, 4, 5 hours away. So you're just going to want to make sure you're prepared for that. All righty, Gil, we got anybody?
Nope, lines are clear.
Okay. Well, we're going to be back in an hour talking about cars, and you're always welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. For the next hour. What did I say?
Back in an hour.
Oh, no, we're going to be back in about 7 minutes for the next hour. And my boss is sitting here correcting me. And that's what she's done for all of my life. And she's not my mother, but she thinks she's my mother. and you heard her say, I need a mother. Perhaps that's what she thinks. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to be back at about 3.5 minutes after the top of the hour. So that's when I'll start taking calls. So right now it's 10:57, 14, 15, 16. So we're 3 from the bottom, 3 from the top. That's about 6 minutes, and we're going to be taking your call. So again, 602-508-0960. The wet weather also brings issues with respect to salt on your car. And when we come back, we'll talk about how to get the salt off your car the very best way so you can avoid paint deterioration and rust and all that other kind of stuff. And it involves something as just parking it on your driveway and getting your garden hose out on a warm day and knowing where to hose it down. That's kind of what the issue is. So I'm Mark Salem. We'll be right back.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. It's 11:04, and we're going to be here till 12 o'clock, like we are every Saturday from 10 a.m. till noon, talking about car and car repair problems, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood, which is the name of our show, is brought to you by Air Park Auto Service. Nadine and Stacy owned Air Park Auto Service in 1985, just about the same time that Renee and I opened our auto repair shop. Well, Stacy passed away a couple of years ago, and Nadine is still running the shop. So for those of you that are interested in doing business with a female-owned shop that answers to no male, perhaps ladies get a comfort zone associated with that, and I understand that certainly, then Air Park Auto, if you live in North Scottsdale, would be exactly the place you'd go. She's on Raintree just east of Hayden, three, four, five blocks south of Bell. So on Hayden Road and Raintree, you go east, and she's on your right-hand side. And she really is a very, very good, well-run, well-respected auto repair shop. That's Air Park Auto Service. That's on Raintree, just east of Hayden in Scottsdale. We have a caller, Matthew. Matthew, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Oh, good morning. I was calling about a 77 Chevy pickup truck that I've been helping my son out with for a year and a half or so. And I got two questions, one about misfiring and the other about the four-wheel drive. Which one do you want to deal with?
Oh, I don't care. Hit me with whichever one first you want.
Well, let me go to the four-wheel drive first, because when he bought it, we tried putting it in four-wheel drive just for a short period of time, but it was really difficult to get into four-wheel drive. And we took it out to a parking lot. And just drove a couple hundred feet, and I said, yeah, if we don't really know what we're doing, let's take it back out, and when we learn more, then we'll deal with it. So that was a year.
Okay, well, let me ask you some questions. Huh? Is the four-wheel, they activate the four-wheel drive, or are you using a shifter that comes out of the floor, or are you using some electronics on the dash?
Oh, no. It's got the little shifter in the floor. It's a manual transmission.
Okay, so you know what you'd really want to do is you'd want one person. I think high lock is all the way forward, if I'm not mistaken. So you would you're going to move the truck back and forth. You get it on level ground, and you just kind of push it forward a little bit, push it backwards a little bit, and we're going to take that shifter, and we're going to move it forward one notch at a time on our way towards four-wheel drive. And you can actually do it with a manual transmission just by kind of clutching it. So you'll apply just a little bit of pressure to the shifter. You're in first gear. You let the clutch out and roll forward three, four, 5 feet, and more than likely you'll align the gears and the shifter will skip forward. And then you'll hit neutral, and then I think you go to four-wheel high. And that's probably what you can do to exercise that. But the extreme would be we're going to have to go in there, pull the shifter out, and stick it in a solvent tank for about a week and a half, clean it all up, lube the heck out of it, and then put it all back on. And that's more than likely what might have to happen unless you can get this free. Once you get it into the gear, then it's going to go back and forth a little easier every time you use it. But it's not a difficult one. It's just a manual shift of the transfer case. So that stick is attached to the transfer case, and a lot of times nobody uses it for a long period of time, so this happens. I can tell you a seasoned guy with gray hair would have a 75-80% chance of getting that thing in all the gears within about 20 minutes. So okay. Let's go on to the other one. You had a misfire issue?
Yeah, it's my understanding that misfiring is different. It's the same thing as backfiring. It's just coming out of carburetor.
No, it's completely different. You don't want to say misfire. Okay. You want to say what it is. Is it backfiring through the carburetor at idle, or is it backfiring the carburetor when you accelerate, or is it doing it at 50 miles an hour? When is it backfiring?
Well, it backfires when he shuts it off, but not every time, just occasionally.
Okay. Does it seem to idle rather high?
Is it idling high? I don't know if you'd consider it high or not.
Okay. Well, sometimes when the idle's set too high, like in the 800 or 900 RPM range, when you shut off a manual transmission, the carburetor will continue to dump fuel into the cylinder. There'll be some red hot carbon in there, and you'll get a backfire. Is the backfire through the air cleaner, or is the backfire through the tailpipe?
Through the tailpipe.
Okay, so that would be an exhaust valve. Now, if the exhaust valves were hanging up and you had an explosion and the valve hadn't closed yet, that's not a real serious issue at this particular point. I'd probably thin out the oil just a little bit and see if I could exercise that. Has this truck been on 100 mile, 70 mile an hour cruise in a long time?
No, he doesn't usually run it on the freeways. It's just back and forth to school and, you know, around town a little bit.
Okay, well, do you ever leave town on business or anything for 100 miles?
No, we haven't felt confident taking it, you know, up north or anything. Concerned about, you know, we wanted to take it hunting this year, but we didn't feel like it was ready.
Okay. Well, as far as the valves are concerned, you know, I would, if it was my son, I'd get some oil in it. I'd probably put a 1030 in it. I think that the possibility exists that the valves are hanging up because of the tremendous amount of varnish in it. So I'm quite sure that I'd probably just take the afternoon off and turn my phone off and drive to Tucson and, you know, see somebody I haven't seen in a while and then drive it back. I may drive it fourth gear sometimes, fifth gear sometimes. I wouldn't go third, and you know, but I think you just exercise this horse a little bit better, and I think that may very well go away. If it doesn't do it on acceleration, then it's not like you got a burnt valve. So that's, you've eliminated, by what you told me, we've eliminated anything really serious. Unless we can't get that valve to unstick, and then if we can't get that valve to unstick, then you might have to fill that motor with some solvent and run it on solvent for a minute at a time over a period of a couple of days, then drain the solvent out, and put oil in it, and maybe do a second or third oil change to get all the solvent out of it, and that sometimes will clean the varnish and keep the valves from hanging up.
Yeah.
So that's the best I have to offer you.
All right. Well, no, that's really helpful. It does misfire also, I think, at around 30 miles an hour in second gear at a certain point, usually when he's going uphill. He can almost get it to do it. I think he's doing about 35 miles an hour when.
Okay, is that backfire out of the
second
type of the
second gear?
Say that again?
It's like, I think it's either second, I think it's between second and third gear.
Okay, but the backfire, is it through the air cleaner or through the tailpipe?
No, through the air cleaner. Yeah, through the carburetor.
Okay. And that, again, that now we've got two valves that are hanging up because we got an exhaust valve hanging off hanging up when you shut the car off. Otherwise, it's not closed completely. And as you shut the car off, the motor is going to make 3 or 4 or 100 revolutions before it comes to a stop. And so if you've got the exhaust valve hanging up when you shut it off and you've got the intake valve hanging up at X RPM in second gear, then more than likely that motor's pretty varnished up. In the old days, we used to put some methyl ethyl ketone, MEK, in motors, which is now illegal in every place of the world. But we used to put MEK in the motors that were all varnished up. And when we got done, those motors were squeaky clean on the inside. But I don't really know anything that works as well as that, but you're not going to find any of that, so you're just going to have to deal with solvent, if that's the case. The alternative is to take the heads off and have them redone, and I suggest there's a lot of steps before that. Okay?
Yeah, no problem. So there's an oil additive that would be helpful then.
You know, I don't know that there would be an oil additive. I would think you'd put 5 quarts of solvent in it and start it up for a minute or two and shut it off, and then let it sit overnight and start it up for a minute or two and shut it off. And I wouldn't run it more than maybe 60 seconds to a minute 20, a minute 30, something like that. And then pull the drain plug, drain the solvent out of it, let it sit overnight, and then put 5 quarts of 1030 in it and go drive it and see how much progress you make.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that, but okay, you can buy a solvent in any of them. Okay.
All right. Well, good luck to you. All right. Thank you very much. And Gil, we don't hear the doorbell, so we're going to assume.
We have Kathy. She's ready for your call.
Okay, Kathy. Good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning. I have a 2009. Frontier Nissan Frontier. It's a 6-cylinder. The heat core went out, and it's a little chilly here in Phoenix without any heat on. And I'm trying to find out what kind of money, and I've had about a $600 estimate. Nobody's looked at it, but $600. And some people said, oh, we can get it out today. And some people said it may be 2 or 3 days. So that's one of the things I'm looking at as to what kind of monies and how long that should actually take. Should I take it to a regular mechanic? Should I take it to a particular Nissan place?
All the information that you're getting from people on the telephone is not going to be any good, because if you were a painter and I called you and asked you how much to paint my house, you would probably care if it was a small 3-bedroom or if it was 40 bedrooms. So what everybody's doing is guessing for you and hoping that you're going to come in. And I suggest that you're wasting your time. Here's how it's supposed to be handled. You take your car in and tell them, I'm not getting heat. And they're going to give you an estimate for the diagnostic process. At the end of the diagnostic process, they're going to call you and give you an estimate on the repair. The diagnostic process could involve something wrong underneath the dash, or it could involve something wrong underneath the hood. And it's their job to figure out which one it is. The first thing I would do is grab both heater hoses after you've driven it for 30 minutes or so, and if one of them's hot and one of them's cold, then the heater core's plugged up or the heater control valve is shut. I would know what to do at that point. On the other hand, if both of them are hot, then I'd be working underneath the dash to find out which one of the doors is not open or closed to allow hot air to enter the cab of the truck. But there's some sophisticated diagnosis that goes on in that process, and I suggest that you're probably going to spend $75 to $125 to have somebody tell you what's wrong with it. Now, the very best that can happen to you is that he calls you up and says, I figured out what it was. The heater control valve underneath the dash, the vacuum line, had been kicked off by some passenger. So what I did is I plugged the vacuum line back on to the heater control valve, and then I taped the vacuum line away so it wouldn't happen again. And your diagnostic is 90 and the fix is 20, so you owe me $111, $120. So that's the best you could hope for, but there is no one in this whole world that can tell you what it's going to cost and tell you what's wrong by talking to you over the phone. All you're getting is best case scenarios and worst case scenarios, and the guys that are giving you cheap numbers want you to come in so they can give you an expensive number, and the guys that are on the top end saying, hey, Kathy, $600. It could be a heater core, and that's going to be $600. That's kind of the worst case scenario. That's all you're getting is the cheap guys and the guys who are telling you the truth.
All right. Well, I think I'm quite sure it's the heater core because when we were going up to Sedona a month ago, it was leaking on the inside.
Well, what color was the leak, and was the water hot or cold?
It was the fluid, not just the water. It was the actual antifreeze.
Well, again, you should have touched it because if it's hot, it's coming from the heater core, and if it's cold, it's not coming from the heater core.
Okay.
So, okay. I mean, there's more to it than that. And if it is the heater core, then if we pressurize the cooling system and we watch the carpet on the passenger side, and all of a sudden we drip and we have it go to a clean cloth, and all of a sudden it's green and it's hot, then you're right, it is the heater core. And then your $600 is probably somewhere in the middle of what it actually costs. Did they quote you $600 for the labor? Did they quote you $600 for the labor and the heater core? Did they have a flush and new coolant put in there? Do they have new heater hoses put in there? Because when you cut out the old heater core, you're going to have to put heater hoses in it. So you have all those dynamics that are involved. But my mind hasn't changed. You are best served by taking it in and having somebody diagnose it and then give you an estimate. And if you don't have a car shop, then go to MarkSalem.com. I got plenty of good guys all over the valley that you could stop and see. I got to take a break. When we come back, we'll take more calls, 602-508-0960.
Raised up from under my hood.
Thank you for sticking around on our show. We've still got some time available, but I need to tell you about Kurt's Auto Repair first. Kurt's Auto Repair is up on I-17 and Bell. He's in the northeast corner of that intersection, I-17 and Bell. What's special about Kurt's Auto? Well, Kurt has a couple of guys that work for him. Eric is one of them that's a master tech that is probably one of the best diagnosticians I know. There's about four or five guys in this valley that are really good, and he certainly is one of them. But Kurt and his wife own the repair shop. Eric is related to them, and again, he's a great technician. But what's nice about Kurt is he's been around for a long time, since 1967. Kurt knows the difference between right or wrong, and he was recognized as one of the winners of the Better Business Bureau Ethics Award last year. So he opened their doors in actually 1987, and I said 67, but my glasses are dirty. And he's been working on domestic and import cars and gas and diesel ever since then. So if you're anywhere near I-17 and Bell and you're looking for a good job, then I would suggest you stop by Kurt's and get an oil change and see how you like them. If you're not looking for a shop and you want to compare your shop to one of mine, you're welcome to do that as well. That's Kurt's Automotive, I-17 and Bell. Let's go to the phones, and we're going to go to Tony first. Tony, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning there, Mark. I got the 2002 Windstar. It's got a light popping up, but, you know, I really want to say something, you know, you guys. I'm so glad you guys made it back, you know, because right now looking at that weather map, up there on the rim, that snow is coming down hard and heavy right now. And, I mean,
it
really
still is.
But, I mean, you know, I guess this is the time you got to go out to the barn, drag those old smudge pots out, fill them up with that number two, and let them burn. Heat that place.
Well, we're lucky because the electricity, we don't have any phone service up here, but the electricity just came back on, and we had both just put jackets on, and I was getting ready to manually fire up the propane fireplace, but I didn't have to do that. And my wife's been drinking all morning long, so she's got antifreeze. So that's
anyway, there you go.
So anyway,
on the light is popping up, okay? We talked before about this, and, you know, I had a bunch of the outer things taken care of to get it through emissions. You know, finally ended up putting the new spark plug wires on there because they were carbon arcing. I have no engine light, but just yesterday I have the check gas cap light pops up. Okay. So I got out, checked the gas cap, made sure it's tightened on, you know, and it's not cycling, you know, it's not going off. I'm just wondering, what are the things I need to look at in that system to figure out why that light's coming on? I mean, obviously, you got to try and find a code, but, you know, what are some of the things I need to do?
It literally says check gas cap on your dash?
Yeah, it says check gas cap.
Okay,
the left-hand side.
I mean, the car's right 13 years or 14 years old, but I've never really seen that before in my life, and I've never had anybody tell me that, but that's okay. The car is still 13 years old, and maybe it's, you know, version 7 of Windows instead of version 10. I think that light actually means that you have an evaporative leak in the system, and it's guessing and says check the gas cap first to make sure that it's on there tight. I think further investigation is going to indicate in a very strong way that you have an evaporative leak. So the system is sucks the fuel off the tank, runs it through the canister, burns it through the motor again, and there is a time that that system is up and that time that system is down. And what happens is it goes into self-test mode. It closes everything. It expects to be able to suck hard on the evaporative system and have this vacuum maintained for a certain amount of time. Well, in this case, it's like sucking through a straw. There's nothing that's going on. We're not developing any vacuum. So we got to go find the leak. The leak detection process involves machines that make smoke. And you got to know where to connect the thing. And then you just stand back and wait for 5 minutes. And wherever the leak is at, white, dense smoke will come out of it. You go fix that bad solenoid. You fix the bad connection. You fix the bad rubber grommet on top of the fuel tank. That's what's going to be involved in what you're up against right now.
All right. Thank you, Mark. You stay warm.
Okay. Thank you very much, Tony. Let's go to Bob. Bob, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Yes, Mark.
Yes, sir.
I have a 2006 Chevy 2500 HD that I have problems with my front brakes. I keep warping the rotors. And I pull a 15,500-pound camping trailer. So I was wondering, do I need to replace my my rotors with slotted and cross drills? And what type of brake shoe should I be putting on?
Okay. I apologize, but evidently my email answer to you didn't get to you. But I don't agree that slotted rotors or drilled rotors is the answer to your problem. I think two things. Number one, I would make doggone sure those rear brakes of the truck are working, because when the rear brakes stop working, it puts the entire load on the front brakes, then they overheat, and then they cause the rotors to warp. So the tremendous load on the front axle causes the brake rotors to warp. The second thing I would do is I would examine the trailer brakes, and if it's a 15,000-pound trailer, it should have brakes on all four wheels. And I would dial up my brake controller where I was on a dirt road and I was doing about 10 miles an hour, and I would make sure that when I apply the brakes on the dirt road that I can lock up the trailers with that, and then I'm going to back off a notch or two on my brake controller. But I need to have that trailer help me stop the truck and the trailer. So the rear brakes, if they fall out of adjustment, or they're not working, or they're not helping, and if they're rear disc brakes, there is a way that we can adjust those rear calipers to get the rear brakes to be part of the braking a lot more. So those are the two things. If I was in charge of fixing your truck, I'd want the truck first. Let's make sure the rear brakes work, and then I want you to bring the trailer by, and you and I are going to work on the trailer brakes and fine-tune that. The easiest way to determine how to set your controller is read the directions, because some of them, they want you to push the brake pedal hard and then dial in a number. Some of them want you to drive on a dirt road, and some of them you want you to drive on an asphalt road. So they all have different ways of setting their brake controllers. If you have another question, just hang on, and Gil's going to put you on hold. I got to get out of this break, so I'll be back in about 4 minutes. I'm Mark Salem, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Let's see what time it is. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. I'm here every Saturday from 10 o'clock till noon talking about cars with you. You're a big part of our show. But I want to tell you about IMM Auto Service just real quick. They've been fixing cars right and caring for their customers since 1972. IMM is one of the few shops in the Valley that specializes in Volvos, Saab, Fiat, and Alfa Romeos. But they also can work on all the other cars in your garage. So if you have a Chevy, Ford, or Dodge, they can do that too. But they are especially good with Volvos, Saab, Fiat, and Alfa Romeos. So they're in the northeast quadrant of Tempe. They're south of the 202, just west of the 101. They've been around a long time. So, but one way or another, perhaps you have a daughter or a son that's attending ASU, and they have one of those cars that's stuff to fix. You are best served by IMM Auto Service. Bob, we're going to go back to Bob. Bob has a three-quarter ton heavy-duty truck. He's warping the rotors on the front brake rotors, and he's pulling a really big trailer. And Bob is concerned that he could upgrade the front brakes as opposed to, and that might help him out. Bob, my explanation of let's get those rear brakes working, and then let's make sure the trailer brakes are working. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. The pads, I know I got warped rotors now, so I need to replace the rotors. The just standard rotors, that you know, GM rotors or what?
Yeah. I mean, you can buy rotors. GM rotors are not made by GM. They're made by some subcontractor. Could be in Texas, could be in China, could be in South America. So, I mean, right now, Motorcraft oil in the bottle is actually Kendall oil. It's not. There's no such thing as Motorcraft oil. So those are just misnomers. But in your particular case, there's no guarantee that you have to replace the rotors either. What we have to do is measure the thickness of the rotor. If the thickness of the rotor is 30 thousandths more than minimum thickness written on the rotor, then we can cut both sides of that. We can take 5 thousandths off one side, 5 thousandths off the other side, and we're still within the 30 thousandths of meat you still have on the rotor, and we're home free. As far as pads are concerned, just get a name brand, Delco, Bendix, Wagner, Raybestos. Those kinds of pads are, and those guys make most everybody else's pads. So, you know, I would use one of those, and I would have somebody mic the rotors to make sure that they do need to be replaced. And it is true, the thinner the rotor gets, the more likely it is to overheat, but that's not carved in stone. It has everything to do with the driver's right foot. So good luck to you, Bob. I appreciate your calling with that question. Let's go to Tony, and then we're going to go to Marcos. Marcus, Tony, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. I have a problem with my AC. It only blows hot air. Someone suggested checking for the Freon, which I think that's what it's called. So I bought one of those products that you can check it and fill it, but it is full. So someone else suggested it could be the condenser, or it could be these paddles that are inside that aren't opening or closing or whatever. I get warm air, but I also get exhaust right out of the engine, and that's making me ill. But I want to know what's the first step I should do, which I know I do believe I need to see someone, but I don't know where to go that they're not going to, like, charge me $2,000 to fix this. Do you have any ideas on that?
Yeah, you are. First of all, there's no way that you have the ability to see if that system's full or not. Somebody sold you a bill of goods. Somebody's lying to you. The sophisticated equipment necessary to pull the Freon out of your car and measure it by weight, and then determine how much it weighs, and then determine how far you are above and below your Freon level, that piece of equipment is about $4,000. And I own two of them. I'm not bragging about that, but we use two of them. So let's throw that idea out the window. Number one, if you want to do this yourself, is turn the air conditioning on maximum, go to the compressor, and there's two hoses on the compressor. There's a smaller aluminum hose that comes off the compressor, and that should be hot to the touch. The bigger hose that comes off the AC compressor is also aluminum, and it's going to be cold to the touch, ice cold to the touch this time of year. If, in fact, you have hot on one side and cold on the other, then it is true that the paddles, or what we call blend doors, underneath your dash are the most likely suspect. But replacing those is not what you do. You go in and look to see if the mechanical linkage has come apart. You go in and see if the signal is being sent to the door to open. And then sometimes you take the Big Mac out of behind the door so the door can get open, because the Big Mac fell through the vents on the dashboard. So there's all kinds of things that need to be done. And frankly, you're going to be able to just do the first one, and that's just make sure when you're on maximum air that one side of the compressor is hot and the other side's cold, and do it quickly, because the hot one is warm and the cold one, you're not going to freeze your hand off, but the cold one's cold and you'll know the difference.
Yes. Okay, so I do that, and I determined they're, one is hot and one is cold, so then you're thinking it is the blend doors?
Yes, that would be the next place you would look at. You would check to see if the blend door is getting the signal, because I want you to think of the underneath the dash this way. I want you to picture the letter Y, okay? On the left side of the Y is hot air, and on the right side of the Y is cold air. And where the two pipes come to the one another, to the bottom pipe, there's a blend door there. So the blend door will shut off the hot and give you cold, or it'll shut off the cold and give you hot. That's a simplified version where I can paint a picture in your mind using radio.
Yeah, I see that. It's hard on radio. So let's say there is a problem there. What's the next, I mean, how do I go about finding someone reliable to do this?
What part of town do you live in?
I live in Tempe.
This is an embarrassing situation for me, because I've been on radio since 1988, and I do my best never to say the name of my shop, but unfortunately, if you live in Tempe, I don't have anybody else in Tempe. In the northeast corner of Tempe, I have Schumann's Auto, and he could do this for you. Where are you at in Tempe, north, south, east, or west?
South.
Okay, you could go to my shop and talk to my daughter, Andy.
Okay, what is that shop?
It's called Salem Boys Auto, and it's on Warner Road. And it's
That's all right. All right, well, I will follow through with those things, and if I'm running into a wall, that's where I'm going, okay?
Okay, all right, well, good. You talk to my daughter, Andy. She'll take care of you.
Thank you so much. Bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got Tony. I'm sorry. That was Tony Marcos. I know you've been waiting. I'm going to take you the very first second we get back from this break. We'll be right back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday from 10 to 12, we're here talking about cars. And just like I promised, Market, you're up first. How can I help you?
Mark, this is in reference to the guy that had the 77 Chevy 4x4 with the possible sticky valves. Hopefully he's still listening. Have you ever used a motor flush by BK Products?
I am aware of the BK products. I don't presently use them or sell them or offer them for sale for a lot of personal reasons. But I understand that they have a motor flush. But what I think that is important here is we're looking for varnish on the stems of the valve. And what goes into the motor is never going to see the valve. So the backside of the valve is only seen by gasoline as it comes to the carburetor. And so what I was hoping to do was to run solvent down the top of those valves and through the pushrod assembly. And that's what I was hoping to do. But there are a variety of flushes available at a Pep Boys store or something like that. And certainly that would be a good idea for him to try that. Have you had personal experience with that?
I have. I ran it in a 351 Cleveland that had 143,000 miles before I was doing a performance intake manifold swap. And when I pulled the manifold off to do the swap, you could literally eat off the valley pan and underneath, you know, where the valves were. Also, too, have you ever run a little ATF down the carburetor, just a little bit at a time at high RPMs? That cold ATF will sometimes blast the carbon off the tops of those valves, too.
No. We use ATF to soften carbon. We use water to blow the carbon off. So you have to be careful that you don't hydraulic that motor. But we do that both with fuel-injected and carbureted cars. And you've got your right hand throttling it up, and your left hand, you're pouring water across the two front barrels. You don't want to kill the motor, but you got to keep that RPM up high enough, and the cold water will be inhaled by the motor and cause the carbon to shatter like a hot light bulb underneath cold water.
Yeah, so, I've used ATF and water, but like you said, you got to be real careful.
Well, you have to be careful with a hydraulic fluid, with transmission fluid the same. because it's not going to compress. So no matter whether you're dumping ATF down the front of the carburetor or you're dumping water down the front of the carburetor, it's the equal amount of care is the same.
Oh, I know it is.
But I agree with
also,
you.
Also,
the thing of it is, watching some fights the other day on television, and it's sponsored by this company and they had a product that did everything imaginable. You get better fuel economy. It cleans your engine, cleans your tailpipe, cleans your catalytic converter, cleans the backside of your intake valve, cleans the top of your pistons, cleans your rods, cleans this, cleans that. And I'm here to tell you that nothing can do all of that at once. There's different chemicals for all of that. And it's a company that sells this to millions of people, but it's a feel-good doctrine of your motor, and it doesn't really do anything for you. I'm happy you had a clean valley. I'm happy that you found a motor flush that was good. But chemicals that you use on a car, there has to be a certain purpose and a certain outcome. And that's kind of what we were talking about. But thanks for bringing that up, Marcus, because I got to run. I got two mics on the phone. Mic number one, how can I help you?
Hello, Mark. Got a more minutes or 3 minutes of short on time, and I've got a question. I've isolated it down to the clutch area. I hear it in that area. Let the clutch out. It sounds like, a card on the spokes of a bike when you're cranking along. And when I push in the clutch, it goes away. And it doesn't do it in reverse. And it doesn't change RPMs except for if you go faster. And also on that is I go down to Patagonian back, and it doesn't seem to be getting any worse. And it has what's called a dual-mass flywheel. I don't know if you're familiar with those. You there?
Of course I am.
Okay. And I'm just wondering if that's where the problem is. Is one of the springs on that might have broke, and just, getting noise from it. But it doesn't seem to be. I replaced the clutch, about 50,000 miles ago.
Okay. Well, I need you to talk up a little bit because I can barely hear you, but let me tell you. I can't diagnose your problem over the phone, but I can tell you that I can if you were sitting in front of me and I got to drive your car. Because as I drive your car, I'm going to try it with the transmission loaded on the hard XL and on D-cell. I'm going to listen closely for the noise. I'm going to listen to see whether the noise is made when I engage the clutch and disengage the clutch. I'm gonna run a series of tests that could number at least 10 to try to isolate what's happening and where the noise is at.
Right.
The noise is going to come and go depending on where it's at. So
right.
I would strongly suggest that you not jump to a dual mass flywheel or a clutch replacement. I would suggest for free that you just go have some transmission shop and take them for a drive and let them listen to it and let them drive it, because if they're smart, they're going to do what a good transmission guy would be. And at the end of the day, he's going to say, the throwout bearing is hanging up on its carrier, and I can feel it through the pedal, and all I want to do is slide the transmission back and put a file on the front bearing retainer and then put a new throwout bearing in there, and you'll be just fine. That's the conversation you're going to have.
Wow.
So that's what needs to happen is I can ask you the questions, but you're not going to have the good answers, and I'd much rather just drive it myself, and so would transmission shops. What part of town do you live in?
I live in North Phoenix.
Okay. I think Kelly Clark at 40th and Bell could probably drive that and isolate it. I don't really have a transmission shop up in that area that I trust, but I know Kelly Clark's guys could probably get really close on that and give you some focus. And then again, if they teach you how to listen and watch it, you'll be able to determine on whether it's getting worse or getting better, depending on the weather, which sometimes clutches do. It's not uncommon for clutch to have a problem in the summer and go away in the winter, or vice versa. So I would think Kelly Clark at 40th and Bell would be a place that I would drive, stop in, and I would say, would you send your seasoned transmission technician with me, and I'm going to have him for 20 minutes while I demonstrate a noise, and then my question to him is do you want to drive, and can you tell me where that noise is coming from?
Right.
All righty. All right. Okay. Thank you very much. And let's go to Mike number two. Mike number two, how are you today?
Pretty good. How you doing, sir? What I've got a 2002 Chevy. It's an 8.1 HD25. Silverado, and my instrument cluster gauge is up in front. The fuel gauge is always back and forth, dropping to low fuel, and I know it's got gas in it, and my trans temperature gauge is flickering all the time. How big a deal is that to change that cluster gauges out?
Well, it's two things. It isn't that big of a deal. What's going to happen to you is that most of us are going to want to take the cluster out and look at the connections at the back of it and look at the printed circuit on it, make sure that that's all good, and then plug it back in and then give it back to you and say, hey, does the problem continue for the next week or is it gone? So we fixed a lot of clusters by plugging and unplugging them because that's the way it is. There's a huge plug on the back of that cluster. The second issue is that there is a problem with the stepper motor on those old Chevy pickups. What you don't want to do is you don't want to send it to one shop who's going to send it to another shop who's going to send it to another shop who's finally going to go to the guy in town that can actually fix it. You're going to find the guy in Phoenix that it can actually fix it. And so you're going to have somebody pull it out. Then you can take it and have it fixed. But there's a little bit of a risk associated with that because then if it doesn't fix your problem, then you were a part of the decision-making process. But you could also find a shop that would bid the R&R, remove and reinstall, plus the rebuild of your cluster. The rebuild of your cluster is going to be a lot cheaper than a complete cluster because your mileage doesn't have to change. Where if you do a complete cluster, then you got to take it someplace and have the mileage changed.
Oh, that's
so
right.
Okay. My advice, and another place you could start at is the Dick Speedo and Tack up on 7th Street north of Indian Schools. Been around since Jesus was a baby. And I would go there and talk to them first because they know speedometers and dash clusters as well as anybody.
And where is that at, sir?
That's Dick's Speedo and Tack on 7th Street north of Indian School on your right-hand side or on the east side of the road.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thank
you very much. Marty, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, I have an old Subaru Brat that was leaking from around the oil pump. I pulled the oil pump, and there was no gasket, just some gray RTV. And I can't get the gasket unless I order the whole engine gasket set. Should I just try the same RTV, or do you have recommend another gasket maker I could use?
Well, what we normally do is we just set the oil pump down on a piece of gasket paper, and then we just draw a line around it. And then we tap on the oil pump, and it will make an impression, all the holes that you need. And then we take a little 3/8 socket, and we put them on top of the hole, and we set it on a flat part of the vise, and we hit the hammer on the socket, which cuts the hole in the gasket. And then we put a slight film of RTV on one side, not two sides, because if you put it on two sides, then the gasket has a tendency to slip and move. So we put RTV on one side, and then we just put it all together. Did that make sense to you?
Okay. So you can just buy any gasket material at any parts store?
Yeah. You just go in and ask for a sheet of gasket material. And did you have an old gasket when you took the oil pump off?
No, that's what I mean. It didn't have one on it. It was just straight RTV.
Okay. It's entirely possible that it would work well with RTV. You'd clean both surfaces, and then you'd clean it with a little alcohol, and then you'd put a thin film of RTV on both sides, and then you'd bolt it all together. And how many bolts hold it on?
Just four.
Okay, so you do them in a diagonal fashion, right top and left bottom, and then left top and right bottom, and you'd bring them all in together. The risk associated with that is you've got about a 25 to 50% chance of it leaking. If you put a gasket in there, you probably only got about a 10% chance of it leaking. So that's you know, it's kind of hard to say. But another thing you could do is you could buy a piece of sandpaper, and if you have a real flat surface somewhere, like on your wife's kitchen stovetop, if it's real flat, you put the sandpaper on top of the glass stovetop, then you rub the oil pump across it on the mating surface, and the oil pump shouldn't be warped. If it's warped, then you're going to have to go with my way with the gasket. If it's nice and flat, then our RTV are more than likely going to work. Okay?
All right, thanks.
You betcha. All righty. Let me tell you about Larry Harker's Auto. Larry Harker's Auto has been in business in Phoenix since 1967. Larry Harker's Auto is on Indian School and 38th Avenue, and he is certainly one of the top 5 or 10 diagnosticians that this city has to offer you. What he has that's missing on a lot of other ones, including me, he has tenacity. Bob will follow every wire everywhere they go. He doesn't take advantage of his customers. But the last two or three cars that have come up to me, I've had people call me and say, I had a truck and you turn on the air conditioning and the horn honks, or I honk the horn and the taillights come on. Bob has been able to find and fix all of those problems with the customer being happy at the end of the day. So those are the issues when it comes to fixing a car. So if you want the best diagnostician, probably in the west side of Phoenix, then you're going to go to Larry Harker's Auto. But they also do oil changes. They also do maintenance service. They also do air conditioning. They work on foreign and domestic cars. They can get your car through emissions and all the other stuff. But when it comes to tracking down that crazy symptom, then Bob at Larry Harker's Auto is a good guy to go. Between now and then, I'll see you next Saturday between 10 and noon. And between now and then, I'm asking you and I'm begging you to wear your seatbelt. I see lots of people that are hurt because they get thrown out of their cars. And in the last couple of weeks, we've had a lot of them. So by all means, wear your seatbelt. You're better off in the car than out.